From the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello, and welcome to the weekly podcast from the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance here on the campus of Texas A&M University. I am your host, Dr. Tim Lightfoot, and I'm so glad that you took the time to download us and join us this week. Every week, we bring you an interesting person in the world of sports medicine or general health in many cases, and today is no exception. We're pleased to have with us this week Dr. Gabe Neal, who is a physician here in the College Bryan Station area. Welcome to the podcast, Gabe.
Thank you, Tim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Let me tell everybody a little bit about you. Dr. Neal got his medical degree from the University of Oklahoma College of Medicine. He did his residency in the Grant Medical Center at Columbus, Ohio, and then did a fellowship at Sacred Heart and Deaconess Medical Centers. He is a family medicine practitioner, physician. His practice is a St. Joseph's family medicine practice here, and just finished a master's in ethics.
That's right.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So you can be an ethical physician.
I'm incredibly ethical now.
They're all ethical, aren't they?
Oh, well, yeah. Some more than others.
We've asked Dr. Neal to come on the show today because he has a passion and does quite a few public talks about Adderall.
That's right, and stimulants as a whole, but certainly yeah. Adderall is one that everybody is familiar with.
Yeah. Tell us about Adderall for those few people that are listening that don't know what Adderall is.
Right. Well, Adderall is one of several medications that are actually a salt, but they are an amphetamine salt specifically, and they do a couple of things. They affect our central nervous system, and they affect our peripheral nervous system, particularly our sympathetic nervous system. Mm. And what we are going to talk about today, I hope, is some of the physiologic features of Adderall and these stimulants, and then perhaps even some ethical dilemmas that they raise.
Sure.
And so Adderall is a really common medication. Mm-hmm. A lot of children are on it. A lot of adults are on it. A lot of college students take it, including athletes. And I think that it has a particular application for your department, Tim, when it comes to athletes using these kind of medications. It has physiologic effects on them that can be problematic. So I think a lot of people out there are familiar with Adderall, but they aren't totally sure exactly what it does. All they know is it makes them smart, and there's a lot more to it than that.
So before we get to the makes them smart part, which I'm always interested in as well, but what is the label use for Adderall? What is it normally prescribed for? Is there one general kind of thing it's prescribed for?
Its primary FDA-approved indication is for the treatment of attention deficit disorder and attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder. Hmm. It's gaining some other indications, and it's being used off-label for a lot of other things, for better or worse. But that's the primary indication.
Right. Now, do you often have students in particular come into your practice for looking for a prescription for Adderall for other issues?
Right. Well, I have a lot of students come in asking me for Adderall or Vyvanse or Ritalin. Mm. These are some of the more common amphetamine salts that are on the market. Mm-hmm. But they usually come with at least a legitimate reason, whether it's the real reason or not. Mm-hmm. Very few of them come in and will say, "Hey, I want this medication just because it makes me smarter." You know, they come in at least feigning some kind of problem that they need it for. But I do have a lot of college students and high school students, but particularly college students that come in requesting the medication.
So well, you said it they think it makes them smarter. Mm-hmm. Why do they think that?
Well, in some ways, they feel smarter when they take it. And what it does do, in fact, is increase alertness, and it does increase your ability to memorize things in the short term. Mm. So short-term memory and alertness are definitely improved with medication like Adderall. And that is kind of the benefit that they're looking for. It helps them study. We would all have improved alertness and focus and concentration ability if any of us took this medication. That's kind of one of its interesting features, is that you can take somebody who's perfectly normal and give them this medication, and their alertness and attention and short-term memory is going to improve. Mm-hmm. And it's benefit for people and patients who may not even have a real deficit is why there's such a high demand for it, even for people who don't have attention deficit disorder.
Yeah, being on college campus, you hear a lot about Adderall and kids taking Adderall to study for finals and so forth. While it has these effects, is that something you would recommend people use it for?
Right. Well, of course not. And yeah. This is where I come down, both on the issue of risk. And there are three main risks that I tell people about. The first is the physiologic risk of taking this medication. Even for people who would benefit appropriately from the medication, mm-hmm. there are risks that they're taking when they get that prescription and then begin to put it in their body. The second is the psychological risk mm-hmm. that are associated with it, and we can talk more about that. And the third is the what I'll call the social harm or mm-hmm. the issue of social justice and academic integrity. And when you use these medications inappropriately, you are taking physiologic risk, psychological risk, and then you're doing actually other people harm. And that's what I'd like to stress to our listeners. This is not the same thing as having a Coke or a cup of coffee before you go in to take an exam.
Yeah. Well, how is it hurting other people?
Right. Well, we talk about, particularly in ethics, this issue of say, social justice. Well, mm-hmm. Particularly in the academic setting, you have what we call positional benefit. Mm. Okay. And what this means is there's 30 of us in a classroom, and if I do better, that means you do worse. Mm-hmm. And when you have something that gives people a significant advantage, mm-hmm. in this case, a medication that makes them significantly better at concentrating and memorizing, you are positionally improving yourself against other people in the classroom. Right. Now, that's a little bit different than, say, an intrinsic advantage, which is where I'm an artist. I'm not competing against anybody. And if I use some Adderall on the side just to make me kind of more focused or more alert and I make better art, well, I haven't really harmed anybody there.
Right.
But in the academic setting, we're dealing with positional benefit, and that negatively impacts the other people in the class. And so what I tell my students is when your roommate or your friend comes in and says, hey man, can I have some of your Vyvanse that perhaps you legitimately get from your physician, you're hurting the other people in that person's class by giving out that medication. And in reality, you're letting your friend or your roommate or whoever take a physiologic and psychological risk that's bad.
Yeah. So they have a competitive advantage the other ones don't have. Much like we discussed use of steroids in sports, kind of the same argument.
Exact same argument or incredibly similar argument. You know, the idea of steroids enhancing people's physical ability, mm-hmm. very similar argument for the enhancement of our cognitive abilities. Mm-hmm. And this is really big. I mean, certainly in the sports arena, there's millions of dollars at stake if someone sure. hits 5 more home runs or 10 more home runs or scores 10 more points a game. But In the academic arena, this is the difference between making it into a different college, getting a fellowship, getting a degree, and then perhaps thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars difference over a lifetime, depending sure. on your grades and your performance.
Or even passing the end of grade exams.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, what's the psychological risk?
Right. Well, as I mentioned earlier, these amphetamine medications mm-hmm. Affect the central nervous system, and they are going to increase certain chemicals in your brain, like serotonin, dopamine, epinephrine. Mm-hmm. And these are chemicals that change our brain, and they affect different parts of our brain. And when we increase our serotonin, when we increase our norepinephrine, when we increase our epinephrine, and our dopamine in particular, we increase the risk of things like depression, anxiety, even psychosis. Mm. And so when people take these medications, even legitimately, they can have these really bad side effects. If someone has underlying anxiety, underlying depression, and then they go ahead and take their roommate's Adderall, they go ahead and take their roommate's Ritalin, and then they can begin to experience worsening depression, worsening anxiety. That's what I mean by psychological risk.
It strikes me that something you said a while ago, if a friend of yours comes to you and asks for some of your Adderall or some of the other drugs, that's illegal for you to give them to them. If you have a valid prescription, you cannot give that medication to other people. That's a felony, I believe, isn't it?
Right. There are laws that prohibit it. I'm not a legal scholar, so I can't tell you exactly what law you're breaking, but it is illegal to divert prescription medications, particularly medicines that are class two, which is a special class. When I prescribe Ritalin or Adderall, I actually have to handwrite it on a special prescription that I get from the Department of Public Safety, and that those prescriptions are tracked. And in fact, the state is constantly making sure that I'm not inappropriately prescribing these medications. So these things carry enough risk to where the state actually makes a special prescription for me to write it out. But if you get that prescription legitimately and you give it to other people, you are breaking the law. And that happens a lot. In fact, there are studies that show that 6 to 16% of all college students will have used a stimulant medication at some point of their college education.
Wow.
So you have a room of anywhere from 10 students, odds are at least one of them is using a stimulant medication illicitly. Mm. Not legitimately, just illicitly. Right.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I think that's what we continue to stress to people, is that these things may help you in some ways, but they have some harms. As you said, the psychological harms. There's some social justice issues as well. But in many cases, if you have that, it's illegal for you to have it.
That's
to
right.
To be using it for those kinds of things.
That's exactly right. But I think that students, well, they ignore the law a lot anyway, right? They take plenty of legal
what's the speed
chances,
limit,
right?
Right.
What's the drinking age limit, right? I mean,
no, students, that doesn't go on.
Okay,
not until 21. No one out here drinks until they're 21.
My bad. I misspoke there. Sorry.
Okay.
They take that liberty because it's really difficult to enforce that law. There may be a law on the book, but unless it's enforceable, and I would say that that's a very difficult law to enforce.
Right.
Occasionally they do, right. And you hear about it.
Now, you spoke a while ago about other kinds of substances you can take in that have caffeine and so forth. So what's the difference between, say, Adderall and something like a 5-hour energy drink or espresso or something like that?
Right. Well, there's some nice categories we can give to a few things. You'll see ads like on TV, or you go into a nutrition store and you'll see some supplements that will say, hey, this improves your brain power. This improves your memory. And these will be things like ginkgo biloba or paracetamide. These are over-the-counter supplements. They're not regulated by the FDA. And their effect on your cognition really isn't even studied. Mm-hmm. We kind of think they might help. Maybe there's some anecdotal evidence. But I would call that the fizzle effect, okay? Maybe there's a little help, maybe there's not. The next step up would be things like caffeine. We know that caffeine improves our attention, okay? People wake up in the morning and they're not really awake until they've had their cup of coffee, okay? Mm-hmm. There's a demonstrated benefit to our brain's function with caffeine, and it does it the same way. It also works in our central nervous system, stimulating things like dopamine and epinephrine.
Mm-hmm.
It also affects our peripheral our nervous system, and we see things like increased heart rate, vasodilation, our eyes dilate. It suppresses our appetite if we drink enough of it. But things like caffeine are kind of a buzz, right? Okay. Then you take it a step further, and now we're into the prescription medication stimulants, okay? And these are medications that have kind of they pack a punch when it comes to the stimulation. So it's a difference of magnitude. I could take it a step further and say then there's the illegal things like cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Cocaine does the same thing that a stimulant will do, okay?
Just to a much greater degree.
On a much greater level, and in fact, to a dangerous level. People are much more likely to overdose on cocaine than they are on Adderall, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's why cocaine is completely illegal. But when you say what's the difference between caffeine and Adderall, I would say that the guy sitting next to me on a test drinking a cup of coffee, I don't think that the magnitude of enhancement is significant enough to complain about. The guy sitting next to me taking a test who's using Vyvanse, who's normally normal, who doesn't have some kind of cognitive deficit that he's correcting, has a magnitude of difference over me from an advantage standpoint that I think is significant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for us, even as physicians and ethicists, to measure the difference. Mm-hmm. Like, how much of an advantage does that person have who's illicitly using a stimulant?
Mm-hmm.
Well, hard to put a number, but it's real. And I think that it's something that we need to study more and look at more and be cognizant of.
Yeah, and it's interesting you bring up, we were talking about the caffeine and the varying levels of effect, because I think in many situations now, caffeine has kind of been removed from a lot of the banned substances list for athletic performance anyway, so they are a lot more flexible with the use of caffeine now in some of the sports world. Speaking of sports, you brought up a while ago, a lot of the athletes now are using Adderall.
Yes.
Why are they going that direction?
Well, I'm not certain that they're doing it to improve their performance, but it's not hard to imagine that a pitcher that has better performance on the mound from a cognitive standpoint, his ability to focus on what he's doing next, to stay focused on the game, not on someone in the stands, not on what's going on outside of the game, is going to benefit from being on this medicine. I mean, we all know that the psyche is huge to these athletes. Mm-hmm. Okay, their ability to stay in the game, stay focused on the game is huge. I think they're using it for that. That would make a lot of sense. I think the real danger, though, is that it does upregulate heart rate. It does increase their blood pressure. Mm-hmm. You're taking a stimulant that's going to push that autonomic nervous system, particularly the sympathetic, that fight response into overdrive, and then now you're going to go out on the field and push your heart rate even harder, and you're going to push your body even harder than it would have been already. I think there's a bit of a danger there. Mm-hmm. And so in the past, when I've come and talk to professors, even had a chance to talk here in your kinesiology department, these are the signs you need to look for. Students that have a resting heart rate of greater than 100, you need to be...
Yeah, there's an issue.
You need to have in your mind that they might be taking a medicine that's doing that to them, particularly a stimulant.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting, as we talk about that in the sports world, and we come back, I guess, a little bit to the personality types. I've known some athletes who were very anxious before competition performance and would tend to go towards more of a beta blocker kind of thing to actually relax and chill them out a little bit more.
Right.
Those kind of people, they took Adderall, I think they would go the opposite direction and would even have worse performance, wouldn't they?
Right.
So it really depends on the kind of individual, huh?
Right, you can. And I mean, I have patients in my office that come in, they have attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity disorder, and we trial a medication, particularly like Vyvanse, Ritalin, or Adderall, and they come back and say, I can't take this. It really affected me badly. My heart rate, I had palpitations, I was short of breath, or I couldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. Okay, again, we're talking about alertness here, and people take these medicines. Probably one of the biggest side effects I see is the inability to sleep. And so that's bad. You know, I mean, we need our sleep, and it can really negatively impact that.
Are there other populations in the world that most people wouldn't think of that may have a tendency to overuse drugs like Adderall? I mean, we've talked about students, we've talked about athletes. Are there maybe other populations that you see often?
Children in particular. I mean, we talked about students on a kind of on an adult level, but there's the debate that's ongoing about the overuse of stimulants in our elementary age children. And I'm very aware of that in my practice, and I'm always trying to talk parents out of using medicine to deal with attention deficit disorder. Certainly there are children that really benefit, but there's kind of a take a pill to fix a problem mentality that we've developed, at least here in America and in other developing countries, where we have teachers that have too many students in the classroom, and one way to make sure that they all behave is to make sure that, you know, they're all on a good medicine to keep them in line. That's not the teacher's fault. It's not the parents' fault. It's kind of the situation we put ourselves in, I think, as a society. But that's another population where I see an overuse of the medication, and there's some strong arguments for that out there.
Do you have parents pressuring you to put their kid on Adderall because they think it will increase their cognitive ability?
I have, in my own practice, I haven't yet had a parent come in and say, look, I want my child to be on this so that they'll make it into the next school kind of thing. Yeah. I don't doubt that I will. It's certainly not an everyday thing. Most of the parents that I see are just desperate for help. Mm-hmm. They have a child that's really uncontrollable or, is having major problems in school, and they usually are there more out of desperation than they are out of desire for academic benefit. On the elementary level, I have not really seen that. Right. On the high school level, a few occasions where there's been the pressure to have it so that they can make better grades, and that there's a bit of a nuance to that.
Yeah.
When we're talking about taking the ACT or the SAT, and I'll tell you a story. A good friend of mine, on the day of my wedding, I hadn't seen him for a few years, but a lifetime friend of mine, came to me and said, yeah, I'm taking the LSAT in a few weeks, and I'm excited. I'm going to get into law school. And I said, man, that's so great. I'm excited for you. You know, what have you done to prepare for the LSAT? He's like, well, I've taken my, you know, my Princeton Review class, and I've got my Adderall, and I've got, you know, and he went on with a few things that he's done. And I was stunned because here's my friend. He doesn't have attention deficit disorder, but he, you know, managed to get his hands on his test day Adderall.
Yeah.
And I thought, here's a good guy. Here's somebody. He's not a trickster. He's not a bad person. But he recognizes that taking this medication is going to help him do better on the LSAT than he would have otherwise. And it's available enough for him to just get from somebody pretty easily for the day of the test.
Wow.
And that's when it really hit home with me that this was bigger than just, you know, theoretical. It was it was close.
It's
somebody
real.
That I knew personally and who I was surprised to see doing it.
How do we work with students, if we think now about the kind of the more the adult student, how do we work with students to move them away from this strategy?
Well, I think you really have to make clear that they can succeed without it, okay? There is pressure to succeed, but I think that we do our students a disservice when we tell them this is kind of the only way you can do it, or you're not good enough without the medication.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the danger, I think, is that people try this medicine. Their roommate has it or their friend has it, and they try it. And they see a nice benefit. But you know how we are as humans. It's like once we've got something that works a little better than normal, we want that all the time.
All the time.
And so I tell students that you don't want to handicap yourself. And if you start using these just recreationally, it's going to impact your confidence in yourself and with your God-given abilities, you know, with what you already have intrinsically. And, you know, if we're made, for a purpose, if we have a goal in our life, I think history has shown us that we can reach those goals without artificially cognitively enhancing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to encourage our students that they need to rely on what they've got, and they can certainly work to improve themselves, but they don't have to artificially enhance themselves to get where they want to go. It's kind of the lazy way, you know, out of things, I think, and that's not good. The second is that they're taking real risk, and I think most students just really aren't ready to think about the risks that they take.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
They're not risk averse,
right.
But we've got to make...
They're young and invincible.
Right on, and unfortunately, they're not really invincible, and students die every year. From things like this. They're mixing alcohol, they're mixing stimulants, they're mixing it with caffeine, and they're overdosing, and they die. But we've got to encourage them, we've got to tell them what the risks are, and then I think everyone responds to fairness.
Mm.
And when I begin to explain to people how they're really making things not fair, particularly in the academic setting when they share their pills, that should hit home, because we all understand fairness. And so I think if you put it in that context, it gives them hopefully enough of a reason to not do stupid things and to think about what they're doing. It's a difficult position because I think students are and people, not just students, but the student population is what I'm most familiar with, are gonna try and get whatever advantage they can despite the risks. And so it's gonna take some work. I think if we see a student that's coming into class exhausted, particularly like in the kinesiology department, we might have a chance to get a set of vital signs on somebody, see their heart rate, see their blood pressure, see their pupils are dilated, and you say, you know, listen, is everything okay? What's going on here? Are you taking some medicine to help you focus and study? You know, I think students are going to be pretty honest and say, yeah, I probably overdid it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you can... You know, if you can reach out to those students that are coming in already with those side effects of these stimulants, then you can identify them and reach out to them.
Mm-hmm.
And in the kinesiology department here, an opportunity that almost any other department doesn't have.
Right, right. Yeah, because we do have that opportunity to, hey, we'll take your heart rate. At least
right.
We know how to do that pretty quickly.
Right
and
on.
Easily. Yeah. Very much enjoyed the conversation today.
Oh, thank you so much.
And
a pleasure.
I'm glad to have you here. We'll have to ask you back at some other point. We always give our guests an opportunity to give us their take-home message.
Right. Well, like I said earlier, I think that I would just tell our listeners that these medications, Ritalin, Vyvanse, you know, Concerta, Metadate, there's a long list. These medications carry significant physiologic risk.
Mm.
They carry psychological risk. And ultimately, they carry some social risk. In the sense of the competitive arenas, particularly in the academic area and to some degree perhaps the sports field. And They hurt. They have the real potential to hurt themselves. They certainly are hurting other people in those areas. And if we can appeal to fairness, I think we would say these medications have a role for fixing a deficit.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a role, at least in the area of medicine, for enhancement.
Mm.
And that's really what I'm opposed to. It's not, I'm not opposed to fixing people that have an attention deficit disorder. I think that's a good thing. I am opposed to taking normal people and trying to make them better than normal with these medications.
Yeah.
So
it could be a the same story for steroids.
Exactly.
We could just go back and just substitute the word steroid and talk about sports a little bit more, and we're there, right?
Right. There's a lot we can learn from both sides of this these dilemmas.
That's true. Well, thanks again for being with us today, Gabe.
Thank you, Tim.
Joy. And we'd like to thank you all for being with us today. We have, as we do every week before we sign off here, we have the podcast T-shirt question of the week from our producer.
What are the two reasons people think Adderall makes you smarter?
And that's our podcast question of the week. Be the first one to email us the answer to that question at HuffLinesPodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. And you'll win one of those nifty podcast T-shirts that we have. And they are great. We're starting to see them running around the community more. Again, thanks, Gabe, for being with us today. And we look forward to having you back at some point.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And again, thank you all for taking the time to download us and listen. If you've got any questions or comments, you can certainly send those to us. You'll hear the email here in a few minutes in the closing credits. And we hope that next week you'll join us again for another person in the world of sports medicine and human performance. And until then, we hope that you have a healthy and active week.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Cheryl Marek and Samantha Springer, made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closings are provided by johnmilesproductions.com. Music was provided by David Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.